Well, hello. How's it going?
Pretty good, fellas. How you doing?
I'm doing well, gents. How goes the struggle in the US of A?
He's here. Richard Oliver's here, everybody. Good to see you.
Blake brought his own media board today.
Yay! Oh, wait, I forgot.
Could you say that yay in any more sarcastically than you did? That was pretty good.
Welcome to the Chasing Tone Podcast. We're gonna talk some stuff today.
I feel a bit
Brian
sick.
Brian likes yogurt and peanut butter, and Blake likes cheese. Yogurt.
What's happening?
Sometimes. Richard's gonna say something inappropriate and probably get sprayed. Probably get sprayed. Probably get sprayed.
This is nightmare fuel. I cannot say anything positive about the previous 60 seconds, Blake. You have scarred me for life. Reminded me a little bit of and I don't know if Andrew Bimson listens to this, because he's probably the only person who's going to get this, but that reminded me a little bit of one of the songs on Holger Suke's On the Way to the Peak of Normal, which, if you've never heard it,
yes,
is one of the freakiest but weirdly catchy albums of all time. Highly recommended.
Okay. I just made that up on the fly. So, you know.
You didn't write that beforehand?
No. Huh. I just was struck by the muse.
Man, you need to put that out on Spotify right now.
You need to immediately strike the muse so he doesn't come back. That's what I say. Wow. That was horrid.
Are you sure? Because I feel something brewing. I feel like a little bit of...
I've returned, here I am. Ooh, ooh,
ooh. Are you high? Have you been taking fungibles? What the hell is wrong with you?
I'm just over here living my life, man. I'm just doing my thing.
Living the best life you can.
I think Blake has discovered the legal dispensaries in his area.
They're so legal. You can just walk in. They got all kinds of stuff. It's great. It's like an Apple store.
It's like an Apple store for the herb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about...
water this morning and a multivitamin. Does that count? Oh, yeah. And
what now? So you've just said some words and I'm not sure any of them mean anything to me. Can you...
Oh, sorry. A multivitamin. Does that help?
Okay. Yeah. A little.
Yes.
Is that a new thing?
No. I do that pretty much every day.
So why did you feel the need to announce it today?
Because Brian was like, Blake's high. You both are like, Blake's high on marijuana. I'm like, no, I'm high on life, boys. I'm here just enjoying myself. Because how could I not, in the presence of such fine gentlemen such as you two?
Oh, us. Oh, I get it.
I think the vitamin that Blake's taking is probably tetrahydrocannabinol.
Tetra high cannibal. They're three words.
I don't think
definitely.
That's
I think that's
Does it say THC on the side of your vitamin container?
It has a leaf on it.
Five leaves by chance?
Yeah, like five leaves. Like it's like a maple leaf but pointier.
Yeah, that ain't no regular vitamin there, folks.
So that does lead me to a short but slightly funny tale. My grandpa, who's he's pretty straight laced, old school guy,
but a legend,
went to Mexico.
Show.
Yeah, well, yes, the guitar strap making legend that he is. He went to Mexico. This was years ago. Like I was probably like 12, and he comes back, and he's tan. He's having a good time, and he's talking about this belt buckle he got, and my dad's looking at it, and he's like, "It's an interesting belt buckle you've procured yourself there." He's like, "Yeah, I just thought it was pretty cool. It's got this fancy leaf on it. He thought it was, I don't know what kind of leaf he thought it was, but it was.
And for some reason, every time I walk by the kids, they high-five me. I don't get it. Right.
It was definitely a pot leaf. He may still have it for all I know.
Papaw, that's not what you think it is.
Yeah, that's kind of what the conversation my dad had to have with him was like, yeah, I don't. That's not exactly what you think is going on there.
You know,
but knowing my grandpa, he kept it.
As I say, maybe your grandpa, he's like, I don't care. I'm going to rock it out.
He might have. You know, I can't really remember how that all played out. I do remember the conversation, though, and I thought it was funny.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure neither my father.
I'm going to have to get me a same thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure neither my father nor my grandfather would know what the leaf was. I might start buying them like Snoop Dogg branded clothing. See if they notice. Well, not my granddad, but definitely my dad.
I like it. He would rock it.
That's fantastic. Hey, so since we're a gear podcast,
what
do I want to talk about today?
Gear podcast. Oh no, this is going to get bad. Oh. I'm feeling mad with power right now.
I'm having Dovey Doss flashbacks.
That was a good time, though.
Oh, yes.
I saw a video of him recently at Sweetwater, and he called Ryan Burke up onto stage, and they jammed together. Mm-hmm. And it was a very cool moment. I was like, I really love that. And there were lots of other people in the audience. I think the only one I recognized was probably Phil McKnight. But, yeah. Did you guys see that?
I didn't see that.
That was at Gear Fest last year when that happened.
Was it a last year thing?
Was it last year?
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it until
now. Trickling those. There's a lot of content from there, so I think like some of it's still like just now hitting the interwebs.
I mean, they're getting ready to have another Gear Fest here.
Yeah, I got a call with them on Friday to see what the dealio is.
Yeah, I'm not invited. Sorry.
I don't know if I am either. I might not be invited either.
I think they've got
a weird situation.
An excellent membership policy by the sounds of it. They appear to be rejecting all the correct people.
Did you get an invitation?
It's weird. I mean, I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. We'll see how it works out. I mean, it's weird being a manufacturer who also is a YouTuber. Yeah. I mean,
a content creator.
An influencer of sorts, you know.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Like, for a long time, I was mostly on the, at least public-facing, you know, more content-based side and more behind the scenes with everything. And as the Stringjoy stuff is unfolded more and more publicly, I'm finding myself in your shoes a lot more, Brian.
Wait, hold on, what?
Yeah.
Like, if we invite you, we have to invite all the other companies that have, you know, that do content as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a, so that maybe that's what my call on Friday is. Like, we loved having you, but
yeah,
we got to invite all of Ernie Ball and Dario's content team out too. If we invite you, I don't know, maybe who knows.
That would be a good time also.
Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. You know, I haven't even looked at our list today. I don't even know. Where should we start at? Do you even know what day it is, Bri?
Are you aware of that? Let's start there.
It is a weekday.
Correct. It is a
weekday. We should probably maybe dive into the remainder of our plug-in stuff. Not plug-in, but our DAW stuff. Seems like people like that we've been talking about. We've had a lot of positive comments about our past few episodes.
It's the most useful yet still scatterbrained conversation that we've ever had probably on this show. Mm-hmm.
Join us for next week whenever we talk about how to make peanut butter.
Oh, you just grind up the peanuts. That's all I got to do.
And that's the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being very careful what I say here. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, I've got buttons now too. You watch out.
Yeah, you got dual spray bottles. If Blake doesn't have a spray bottle, we need to get him a spray bottle.
I don't have a spray bottle, but I haven't loaded. These are factory plug-ins.
Do you have a laser gun? Because that would be equally as effective.
I mean, I got that, the siren. I got the like that's pretty good.
That just makes me think I'm in an old school rave. I just want to start making fish.
Do you want to start making fish?
Yes.
What?
Big Fish, Little Fish, cardboard box. You're not aware of?
I have no idea what the Hades you're talking about.
Big Fish, Little Fish, cardboard box. That's how you rave.
Wow.
Did you not know that?
Those were good drugs, weren't they?
I just taught you how to dance, Bri. That's next time you go.
Big Fish. Big Fish.
Big Fish, Little Fish, cardboard box. I just usually go.
This is my dance.
Mine's like this.
To be fair, if you went to a rave in like the 90s, Bri, and danced like that, you would have a lot of friends instantly. That would definitely amuse quite a lot of people, I'm sure.
They would be like, that guy's Holden, for sure.
Don't go near him. He's so high, he's turned into a dad from 20 years in the future. That happened this week, by the way. Someone...
You turned into a dad?
I did that 20 years ago, but still refused to admit it, and I'm 12 in my own head.
Still suffering from the effects of that one.
Yeah. I understand.
That's a long-term commitment. I saw an article about someone who said they were a time traveler and that tomorrow, and this was a week ago, actually 2 weeks ago when this comes out, 8,000 people were going to be taken away to another planet. Yeah, I don't think that happened. So I reckon this time traveler probably was lying. I'm just going to put that out
actually, there. I'm just saying, 8,000, if you took 8,000 people off this planet without saying anything and you did it individually across the whole planet, you could totally make 8,000 people go.
No one would know.
No one would know.
You'd have to do it selectively. If you did it all from my town, people would know. That would have, or you know, any single town.
Yeah, you wouldn't
town.
Do that. You'd be like, pluck one from here and pluck one from there.
20 per country.
You get to see Tater Swifty, Mayor Tater, getting beamed up. Well, what in tarnation's going on down here?
Don't forget my Bud Light. I gotta have my Bud Light if we're going on a trip.
I gotta have my road soda.
That's it. Nothing better than a road beer, fellas. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I feel that you are both speaking from experience.
I think we're poking fun.
Okay.
So what? Where did we leave off in our recording journey? Like, I don't remember.
I think it's confession time. Although we write notes, and although we made a very sort of structured attempt to say we're going to talk about DAWs, we did kind of just then fire off in multiple random directions the minute we said it. And has been pointed out that we probably spent a disproportionate amount of time discussing the correct pronunciation of three-letter acronym stroke initialisms like WAV.
Right. Yeah, nothing better than a good WAV file.
Mm-hmm. WAV.
Yep.
But I feel we need to kind of, A, bring it all sort of back to a summary, so a step-by-step summary, and then maybe B, look at how you might want to add other instruments. So, like, I found myself when I kind of had a drum kit and a bass guitar and a guitar thinking, I don't need anybody else to make music. And that's how I started recording in a little 16-track Porter Studio environment. And that became DAWs, and that's where I am now. So that probably applies to more than one listener. So why don't we do that, Bri?
Well, I have a question. There's so many things like we can talk about. Like, for example, should we talk about using guitar effects hardware? So the pedals versus guitar effects inside the DAW software?
I suppose it's worth mentioning that they're kind of the same thing as far as like if you're building a chain.
Spray him, you know, Bri. Spray him immediately. They are not the same thing.
Oh, sorry.
That's bad words. Watch your mouth.
Sorry. It's almost like companies can make even plugins of the pedals that actually exist in the room.
Oh, spray him again. Yeah. Spray him.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on. Just a little something first here. Here you go. Just a little.
I'm just going to let you know, Bri, it doesn't work when we're all on camera. We've finally given away the secret of the bong sound.
That sound effect does, that sound effect doesn't work on camera.
Oh, we can try it again. I can just pretend. Well, there we go.
Okay. Here we go. Oh, wait a minute. There you go. Now we got it. Get big and deep.
Yep.
Hold it in. All right. There you go.
Good job.
Hold on, is that the national anthem? Oh, no. Sorry, I thought it was a national anthem. I was just rising to salute. Right. Well, I'm glad that this attempt to say something sensible about DAWs has indeed ended up in a structured and constructive session. Thank you, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
And good night.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so Richard wants to summarize. Brian really wants to talk about plugins so badly. It's the thing he wants to talk about. We just won't allow him to just
free range talk
about plugins. Yeah, let's allow it. So, Brian, what is a plugin?
Well, a plugin is a type of thing that you put on each individual track, or actually you could put on the whole mix if you want. And it
does. Do you call it software?
I would call it a software of sorts because there's generally, not always, but generally no hardware type of device associated with it. But that also carries its own exclusions because it can be hardware that also controls the plugin at the same time.
Like Universal Audio stuff. But let's, for the sake of simplicity, let's just talk about non-hardware.
Okay, so let's simplify it. So let's say you want a reverb on your guitar. Now, if you're in a professional studio situation, generally, not always, but generally, they're going to be like, I just want dry guitar, no reverb. All that we're going to do after you record the track, we'll put our own type of reverb on that we want. We can use whatever, spring type of reverb, or maybe we want plate, or maybe we want actual room type of reverb. You know, like the Eddie Van Halen reverb, for example, on a lot of those earlier albums, was not an amp reverb. That was basically one speaker at one side of a big concrete room and a microphone at the other. And that's how they created that reverb and chamber reverb, if you will. And, all that stuff has a completely different sound. And so you can mimic that with the plugins because they use IR technology to create that. And so, you know, that gives you a lot more options after the track is printed or recorded. So the problem is, like, let's say you're like, oh, I love this surf style reverb. I'm going to crank it up and I'm going to record this track. Well, you might get to a point in mixing, you're like, there's way too much reverb on that guitar, but now you have no way to take it off. So you're stuck with it. Mm-hmm. So that's generally things like that, for the most part, people are going to kind of put that on after the fact. But there's also software, like, you know, maybe you're like, I really wish I would have used a compressor pedal on that. Well, just take a compressor pedal effect, assuming that you're using like a IK Multimedia or some sort of other plugin that recreates the guitar signal, the amplifier sound, and right? Mm-hmm. So you can actually just basically drag a little compressor pedal in front of that guitar amp plugin. And it's just like it's very similar to having a compressor pedal going into that particular amp. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to be said for that as well.
When I said you could, that they were the same in the reference to like how a guitar player would think about it, the way I was thinking of it is, say, let's pretend you're plugged straight into your interface. You got your track set up and it's literally just dry guitar with no amp, no anything on it. If you have like a collection of plugins you like, or maybe something like IK where it's got a bunch of different programs built into it, you can build a signal chain just like you would a pedal board.
Yeah.
But you do it in the software. So you say you've got the wonderful Wampler Metaverse delay in there and you drag that in and you want your delay and you want just a delay pedal into an amp. You can have that delay go into something from IK or I really like the Benson plugins. There's some Joey Sturgis ones I really like. There's all kinds of different amplifier plugins you can use. And it's like swapping amps in real life, except you just go click, new amp. And so you can build an entire signal chain in the box, just plugging your guitar straight in. And then you could do that multiple times. You can take that same signal and copy and paste it and have a whole different track with a completely different signal chain. Mm-hmm. And you do it all on a track by track basis. And it can be very fun and addicting.
It is. It's a whole nother level of tone chasing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because there's things in the software world you can do that you just can't do with pedals.
Like running amps into other amps.
Yes.
You can't do that in real life. Right. But you can do it in software.
Right.
I plugged in six hardware pedals the other day of the exact same pedal and ran them all at once just to see what would happen. Just going to let you know that. I can say no more.
Is that a multiple tumness thing?
No.
You were like tum-nied all the way around.
I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but my signal got quieter the more I switched on.
So you're in multiple volume pedals then, basically.
Yeah.
It was. It was my Morley volume pedal collection. You are correct, Bri. I was dusting them.
Yes.
Yes.
Going back to
the Wampler quieter or pedal that you were talking about, guys. You guys were talking about that off the air. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that. Oh shoot.
You're gonna say too much.
That's all right. I'll just edit this out. No one will ever know.
Okay. Quick edit.
Excuse me. I had beans for lunch. So just going back to the pedals and the setting them up, I mean, certainly in Pro Tools, you get 11 rack was their sort of default guitar sim. I use the Neural DSP stuff, and all of these have their own little pedal boards. Mm-hmm. But I'd be right in thinking that Wampler pedals feature on one of the manufacturers. Now, I think it's Amplitube, isn't it, Bri? We've got pedals and Amplitube.
I've done some stuff with IK. I know the Pinnacle's on there. I know the Nirvana Chorus is on there. I don't recall if they're doing any of the other stuff.
They've got some stuff. I don't know how it happened exactly, but they definitely have some Wampler. I believe the Velvet Fuzz is in the Tonex as a factory and option.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Except that's different. You can't like tweak it because it's more like a profile. Yeah, but still it's there and it sounds pretty good.
Hold on. I'm just going to write down
as this good money, as the real thing. I'm just going to say.
That's an extra revenue stream.
I need to invoice IK Multimedia real quick. Hang on just a second. Dear IK Multimedia,
this is a very effects-laden.
You have my effects episode in your box. Please send more money. Thank you very much, Brian.
Mm-hmm. P.S. Send some to Richard, too.
P.S. Send some to me.
P.S. The other host of the show needs some money as well. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yes.
Why? Star Wars because figures ain't going to buy themselves, boys. You know what I'm saying?
I'm almost out of extra sharp cheddar over here. So,
really?
I got stuck up.
I wish I could send you some proper extra mature cheddar from Cheddar. That's the good stuff. Mm. Like, not your American faux white cheddar. That's not the real
you
stuff.
Act like I can't get British cheese here. I have so much British cheese.
No, I know you live in Portland.
Just a short distance.
Mm. Have you ever tried Red Leicester? Mm. That's a good cheese. I recommend that.
Oh, Red Leicester I've seen it. I haven't tried it.
Yeah. Red Leicester.
Is there a plug-in for that?
Yep, there is.
Just curious.
So anyway, as you raise the subject, Mr. Wampler, back to plug-ins.
I just noticed this derailing again. I thought, you know what? People are going to start hating us more.
No, that's impossible. There's no way they could hate us any more than they already do.
You bring up a good point.
Mm-hmm. I get a lot of hatred these days.
It's not just you.
Wait, I bet I can make them hate us more.
Oh, gosh.
How about now? How do you like me now, fellas?
What is that you're actually putting your voice through, though?
I can't tell you yet.
Okay. So anyway,
I will tell you in another 2 weeks.
Oh, I know what it is. Yeah, right, fine.
It's a Line 6 pod is what it is.
Back to plugins.
The kidney bean one.
Yes.
Right. Now, what about running? So most DAWs let you run multiple plugins on your channel strips. So what I tend to do is I'll run all, if I'm recording a guitar using plugins, I tend to set up something like Amplitude or Neural DSP or whatever and run my gain, maybe my compression, maybe my noise gate if I'm chugging, whatever, on that. But then I might run a separate plugin just for reverb and a separate plugin for delay or send them to the master. But you can also, of course, just do it all from that virtual pedal board, can't you? They'll typically let you run everything that you can.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be points where, like, you don't have enough processing power or RAM to, you know, have 3,000 different plugins on your track or on your, you know, in your session. So there's a point where, like, you start hitting the limits of what your computer is going to do. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, it's way more flexible because even after the song is done, the session is done, and you might be like, you know what, I used that one delay on there, but what it really needs is a Metaverse delay on that.
Right.
Please. And so you just go back in and change the effect and boom, there you go.
By the way, there is a rather excellent update to the Metaverse plugin on its way. I can say this with confidence because I tested it today and it just neatens something up. That's all I'm going to say. But at what point does an old man wearing shorts and a T-shirt who may answer to the name of Brian, that would be speculation, come in and tell me that the Beatles recorded everything on 4 tracks and I don't need 192 tracks and all these plugins?
Well, they did, but imagine what they could have done with Pro Tools.
The Beatles were as experimental as they could possibly be with the equipment that they had. Right. So, you know, right. I think that's
that's like saying, you know, I don't name a guitar artist from the 1700s. Well, they didn't need an electric guitar. Yes, but imagine if they had it.
I might have made that up.
Sure.
Well, here's one thing you mentioned, Brian, though, is the processing power things that people will run into. Now, this does limit the flexibility, but let's hypothetically say you've gotten, you know, a really great sounding mix, but your computer just cannot handle one more reverb plugin that you really, really want to use. You could, and this is kind of a holdover from the tape days, you could print, quote unquote, the track as is, as in save that file. Now, you can no longer adjust those plugins because it's saved.
It's saved with that reverb at that setting. It is what it is.
But if your computer just cannot handle any more plugins and you're pretty confident you like how it is, but you just want to add a few more little tweaks here or there, you could save that WAV file, open up a different session or, you know, bring it back into the same one and delete the old track, import the quote-unquote printed track, and then adjust it from there. Because now your computer is freed up. It's not using so much of that. It's already processed that data. So it doesn't need to constantly run in real time anymore, and you can add a bunch more stuff to it if you want.
Yeah,
MIDI instruments. You can't adjust any of the old stuff once you've done that.
True. Yeah, MIDI instruments are notorious for taking up a lot of computer energy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you got a lot of MIDI instrumentation going on, well, you can start slowing things down, and things can actually, when you're playing back in real time, it can start to fill out of sync, and yeah, that's kind of a pain in the butt.
But a good point to make about that, actually, Bri, is before we go to printing, is definitely one of the nice compromises is to have some of your MIDI processing offloaded to hardware, which is why I kind of like having a real drum machine and a real synthesizer, because I know if I'm running those and I run them a lot in tracks, that processing is done entirely away from my CPU. It's just sending it MIDI messages. Whereas if it's a virtual instrument running over MIDI, then of course it's going to use a lot more processing power. So buy a drum machine, everyone, now. That's my advice.
But again, you lose the ability to edit easily when you do that. Just like that's similar to recording a guitar mic'd in the real world. So there's give and take with all of these approaches.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, with MIDI, it's easier because you can just adjust the parameters in real time as you're kind of recording.
Sure. I guess you can't adjust as much as what I mean.
Yeah, correct, yeah. But and just on the terminology, because it freaked me out the very first time I opened up a modern DAW and went, right, how do I make my music record to a file? The term is bounce. They will bounce it to a disc is how you will take what you have recorded and export it to a suitable audio file, like a WAV file.
In GarageBand, it's share. Mithra.
It is share in GarageBand, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. Exactly.
I think
Audacity.
The first time I opened up Logic, and I was like trying to find the export button. I'm like, why is there no export? Why can't I export this?
I did the same thing.
Right. Wrong term, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just a little note on using any DAW for people who are, you know, first time users or whatever. And this comes from years of teaching people how to use software. Just don't be afraid to press stuff and see what happens. Okay, maybe don't go and
hurt anything.
Well, maybe don't go and mess with your MIDI configuration in Pro Tools if you've got that working. And maybe don't go and mess with latency and things like that. But generally, try pressing stuff and see what. That's how I learned most of it, because gosh darn it, see, I've improved so much. I was not going to read that Pro Tools manual when I first saw all 4,000 pages.
The audience is very proud.
Is it raining somewhere? Because I tell you, the quality of the audio from Blake there was 8-bit. So,
well, it won't be on the final file.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of like your video that I'm looking at you now, right
looks
now,
like
Richard.
A potato. Yeah.
Yeah, you're at about 10 pixels.
I bet my daughter's watching South Park or something.
Huh. Get her on here. Let's have a
Leila,
bend her ear a little bit. Like, come on, young lady.
I think she went to Anderton's today on her own with her boyfriend. So not on her own, but without me. I'm a little hurt. we should touch on, whilst we're in plugin land, and before we move on to the other bits, we should touch on like sample rates and bit depth, because that can be a confusing subject. And I don't want to really go into it too much, but I always just look at what the standard for everybody is. I'm struggling with words today. And I'm going to pull it up from a book that I have, because it has a really good diagram.
And who's this book written by?
This would be by Warren Hewitt and Jerry Hammock, and it's known as the Home Recording Studio. Oh, what is it? Complete Guide to Home Recording. That's it.
I was going to say, come on, Richard, you can do this.
Well, I'm trying to multitask here, because I'm trying to search. I'm trying to not get freaked out by something that's happened while we've been recording, but I'm getting freaked out by it. And I'm trying to talk at the same time. Home recording. There we go. Let's have a look. Oh, what an excellent book. I'm just, you guys just sit there while I read throughout the whole
book. Okay. We're waiting for you.
Yeah, go ahead and take your time. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Da, da, da.
Just such a good whistler, man. How can I do anything with that beautiful whistling?
All right, you gotta be done by now. That was like a minute and a half.
Yeah, I'm being an idiot. I mean, I know the numbers that I want to say, but I know that if I say those numbers and get them wrong, I'm going to be absolutely pilloried by everybody, but especially you, Bri. So I'm not going to say anything.
I don't know that much about this area. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Yeah, I'm not as versed in this area as like Warren would be.
I'm just like 44.1 sounds good.
Oh, you got to go 48K, dude. Got it.
What's the difference though, really, Bri?
7K. About 7K. About 7K.
Of what?
Exactly.
the really ironic thing about this is I got involved in, there was a set of edits to the book which involved the bit depth and the sample rate, and I got involved in like some internet guy telling us we were wrong and we had to change it and the debates around it, and so I know all of this, But like everything in life, my brain just goes, no, you're recording. I'm dumping that knowledge. You can't remember that whilst you're live. That's not fair.
Right.
So forget about specific numbers, sure, then, because this is all Googleable.
Yeah.
What the heck is bit depth, Richard?
That's also in the diagram.
You're saying these words.
Yeah, see? And yeah, and I don't know the technical stuff on that one.
Right, here we go.
I just know I said it there and it works. But I don't know what all the details around it are. And
higher bit depths decrease the overall noise floor. Okay? So bit depth is like the resolution at which it's looking at. Oh no, that's a really terrible way of putting it.
Okay, okay, I got it. So
audio pixels.
So I think I can dumb this down. I think okay. So.
Please.
So imagine a sine wave like an ocean, right? That'd be analog if it's just a sine wave. But with digital, it's kind of like at these certain points, go up or down. And the more of those points you have is your bit depth.
That's actually your sample rate, Bri. The number of samples per second are the number of points at which you are sampling the waveform. So,
see, this is what I said. This is where I get foggy because I thought the bit depth was the okay, but that doesn't make that would be sample rate.
So sample rate is the number of samples per second. So for example, 44.1 kilohertz is 44,000 samples per second, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the bit depth is the number of zeros and ones in each sample. And so that changes the fidelity of the sample. And again, higher the bit depth,
right. So, yeah. Gotcha.
Well, it's the spectrum of data in each sample. So, therefore, it is a way of decreasing the noise floor. Higher sample rates, on the other hand, they're like, as the book will tell you, frames per second in a video. Closer intervals, i.e. higher sample rates, mean, you know, much more samples per second, therefore a much more natural reproduction. You're right, 44.1 is the level at which a human can hear in recorded music generally, but 48 is the most popular, and 192 is kind of mastering for Dolby level, I guess.
Oh, you're right, it is 44.1 in it, so my math was off. Difference, Blake. It's three. The difference of three. Not so.
0.9. And in terms of bit depth, generally these days, most online services will ask for a 24-bit depth, whereas in the past, CDs were 16-bit depth. So if you're recording, if you hit for 48 kilohertz sample rate and you hit bit depth 24-bit, you're going to be fine on basically every platform. So if you're recording at home with Brian whistling and me on the bongos, that's what you want to set up for. I don't know what Blake would be doing. Oh, I do know what Blake would be doing, but I'm not going to say anything because he'll start doing it again.
Running it through a distortion and then he'd tune it down.
So look, we got there in the end, and I apologize.
What I'd be doing.
I'm not. It would involve that bit of kit that you're hiding from us.
What exactly would I be doing, Richard?
That's like the little voice in my head that says, go and buy another guitar. I've got a good new guitar.
See, there's
story
a voice in my
tell.
Head that says, go to reverb.com right now and buy my Friedman guitar.
Brian, I'm telling you, dude, by the time this goes out, you'd have sold it for 10 times what it's up for.
I don't know. I mean, it's a one of a kind. It is a one of a kind, but
being fettled by Brian Wampler for a start.
It was like the prototype. It was the prototype for the the vintagey Telecaster thing, right?
So we're 40 minutes in. We've sort of touched plugins. We've just done recording sample bit. I don't think we're getting my summary. Let's just put it that way. But what about recording other instruments? So I'm going to very quickly touch on one very simple one. What if you want to record a drum kit? How do you record a drum kit? And it's not an electronic drum kit.
That is a simple thing to bring up with a complicated bit of answers, I think.
Well, I think we'll cover both, Bri. Because if it's an electric drum kit, you take the output from the brain of the drum kit and you plug it into the input of your audio interface jobs a good one, essentially. If it's an acoustic drum kit, you've got to mic it. And there are multiple ways of miking a drum kit. My favorite is a kind of combination of the classic way. The classic way is to put a small microphone around basically every area that you can and an overhead mic and a kick drum mic. But the Led Zeppelin method was basically overhead, kick drum, and sort of snare Tommy sort of area mic and variations in between. That's enough to get you going. Three mics is enough to get you going.
Isn't it usually two overheads, or am I going crazy?
There's multiple ways of doing it. Double overhead is better. That is actually authentically, I think, where Led Zeppelin ended up. But I think the start was always one overhead, one kick drum, and one snare. I think there's probably actually a famous producer whose name that belongs to. If only I
believe that's the Glyn Johns technique.
Yeah. If only there was a book that had diagrams about this that I spent years looking
at. And I wish there was like a ChatGPT thing I could, you know, but
Yeah, never heard of them, but that's fine.
I'll find it right now. Here we go. It is Jones. Glyn Johns. G-L-Y-N. Yes.
That is a three mic approach. It has been heard on hits from the Rolling Stones, the Steve Miller Band, Joe Cocker, The Who and the Eagles. But it is essentially what I said. Although the positioning of the mics is not quite well. I mean, they depends. The way I mic my drums up is one on the snare, one on the low tom, one overhead, and one on the kick drum. And that gives me basically everything I need.
Yeah. See, I put three on the kick drum. I put three on the snare, one for each tom. I have five overheads. And then
how many ins and outs has your recording interface got?
I use multiples. So basically about 36 channels running in for just the drums, you know?
But I mean, that's a serious consideration. Sure. The recording interface I have has eight ins because I have four permanently wired to drum mics. So four channels of my audio interface are permanently connected to mics behind me. And you need to consider that because you don't want to be recording each drum part separately. It's fine to have a two-channel audio input, but yeah, you don't want to be recording each track.
I was reading something, I totally forget who this is, but there was a producer that was doing that.
Oh, so a big band, Martin Hannett did that for Joy Division when they recorded their seminal album, Unknown Pleasures. Well, that was one use of it. It may not be the one you're thinking of, but in order to get a very mechanical sound, he forced Stephen Morris to record each part of the drum individually. And I'll tell you, that's really, really difficult to do because part of playing the drums is the rhythm of all your limbs kind of rolling in a motion. It makes it much easier to control, I guess.
It'd be like trying to play a guitar solo one string at a time. Like, you only get the D string now.
Yeah, with one finger.
That could sound really amazing, though. That might be my new prog track.
I guess since we're talking about this specific technique, what happens a lot especially in modern, like, progressive metal, things like Periphery and Animals as Leaders and things like that, they'll actually have, sometimes it'll be all sampled drums played on an electronic kit, sometimes. But oftentimes, too, they'll play a real kit, and then sometimes the producers will have massive libraries of sampled drum sounds, and they'll go back and individually replace drum sounds on a per-track basis with something that they already have in their library. And that's also, like, it gets good results, and it's very precise, but wow, is that can be time-consuming. It can be a lot to deal with.
Yeah, I actually mix a lot of that stuff if I have a drum sound. You know, a given drummer, let's say it's a snare, it's usually a snare or bass drum. And I'll either replace it completely or I'll add a MIDI drum with their drum. So it has just a different tonality to it.
Yep.
And it's super handy.
Yeah.
Good snare sound is hard to get, man. It's pretty difficult.
I love to keep mentioning things that Warren has taught me. But he did a little video recently. So I don't know whether you're aware of Moon Gel, which is a dampener that you can put on a snare drum. Yeah. So snares will tend to have a massively high ring. With snares, you know, it's very much what kind of metal they're built out of. And you can buy this really expensive Moon Gel to dampen that ring. But you can also buy 300 sticky hands from Amazon.
Sticks to the skin, right?
Which just sticks onto the skin and does the exact same thing. But you can have 300 for less than the price of one lump of this gel from this company, which I'm sure is extra special in another way. But
yeah, what I've done in the past though, I just get a couple packs of Hubba Bubba, you know, chew it up real good.
What about chewing tobacco? Right, just to Brian,
there you go. I haven't tried that one. That's a good idea.
Why is your snare
they call that
red and brown?
Snare sound, you know.
What is dripping on the floor? That's my chewing tobacco on my snare there, bub. Mm-hmm.
Another little
it's nice and juicy snare.
Is the Gad ring, named after Steve Gadd. But that is just you put a little ring that's the size of a snare drum on the snare drum, like a sort of hollow ring. You can cut it out of a skin. I made one once thanks to my friend Dave, who listens to the show and chastises me about how I say wave. But that was a little thing he taught me.
Wav, you mean? It's not wave, it's wav.
Ah, I've infected you, finally. My work here is done. So, yeah, there are a couple of... But honestly, like recording any instrument, there could be a whole book just about that instrument. And with the drums, you are dealing with very interesting acoustic properties to try and record, okay?
And that's the thing about recording is like the drum sounds, at least in my opinion, are so critical to a good sounding recording. I mean, you can actually get away with a pretty crappy sounding guitar, but if your drums sound terrible, man, it destroys the whole song.
Yeah. We've actually, when we were recording our album years ago for Kicks, we were listening to a song like, man, this song jams. I wonder what it sounds like without drums. Just for fun. Mm-hmm. You know what? It sounded really stupid.
Yeah.
It sounded really, really dumb. The thing about drums, though, and I guess it's worth talking about because this is sort of supposed to be for beginners, is that it's very difficult in like a regular, you know, 8 foot tall ceiling house to get good mic'd drum sounds.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it's very difficult with lower ceilings and everything. And that, like Richard said, that's a whole book in and of itself. Yeah. But it's worth noting, like, don't set up in your tiny bedroom with a bunch of mics and on your acoustic drums and think it's going to sound like Abbey Road. It's just not.
The room is so critical for drums. So critical. Yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't get results that work for whatever you're doing. Right. Just, you know, set your expectations properly.
Right. Yeah, and if that sort of situation, I probably would just use MIDI to kind of trigger each, you know, each snare or bass or whatever, and just end up using a lot of samples. But then it kind of screws up your overheads, but there's some stuff you can do a little bit in there.
And also, virtual drummers are so good these days. So what is a virtual drummer? It's a plugin that will play a drum kit. I think we've probably mentioned this previously, and you get several
It's a ChatGPT drummer, so to speak.
Kind of.
I think they're going to get better and better, but they are frighteningly good. So Jamie Humphreys uses some really clever software, and sometimes I'm listening to it going, I don't think I could tell the difference between that and a real drummer, because most people definitely can't hear the nuances. You don't need to be able to play the drums to record yourself if you can play the guitar. Because if you can play the guitar, obviously you can play the bass. In fact, you're probably superior to any bass player, right, chaps? Oh, my God.
In my experience, the problem...
Totally untrue,
hot take,
by the way.
Hot take.
Totally untrue. Yeah, bass playing is really hard to do well.
Yeah, especially if you're coming from guitar, because you play bass differently, generally, than you do guitar. You know, I'm guilty of this, where you tend to overplay on bass if you're a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And you need to, when you really need to focus on what the drums are doing.
I'm imagining Brian turning up to a jam and it's like a 4-4 type. No, it's probably like a sort of country shuffle. And he's giving it a bit of the old chest high slap bass dancing around the stage.
Just nice. Every song sounds like Maxwell Murder by Rancid.
Like, are you chicken picking on the bass? What are you doing there?
I love playing the bass, though. So, yeah. But recording a bass, very similar to recording a guitar. So we don't really need to cover that. What about woodwind?
Yeah, it's literally the same. Just think about it in bass player terms instead of guitar players as far as what you're going to use. It's the same exact thing.
We've probably covered enough to give people a rough idea of how
to record. Stay tuned for part four next week.
A rock band. Oh. And look, we're already 50 minutes in. We haven't touched on those leaked Warus pedals.
Right. So let's we can do a quick of the important stuff.
Quick update. So quickly on the leaked Warus pedals, I don't know whether they are real. I've seen a picture of a load of Warus budget pedals. I knew they were releasing a budget line. They've got sliders on them. How do we feel about sliders instead of rotary knobs?
I like them aesthetically. I don't think they provide much in the way of utility that's a lot different, but I do like looking at them, so I'll take it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think... unless they're like sealed sliders, which are a lot more expensive, there's just the tendency that you can get dirt and dust in there. And we all know what happens when your pot gets dirty. One,
you do not want dirty pot.
Two, whenever you move your slider, you're. You know?
See, I noticed that with my micro synths.
I heard dueling voices there and I couldn't discern which was which.
I was saying, can you give me that sound again, Brian? I'm not.
You want to sample that? Here you go. Yeah, here's your sample.
Okay, yes. Uh-huh, very interesting. Okay.
Pair of.
So, yeah, I mean, so it's
gosh
cool.
Darn
but,
freaks.
So that would worry me.
No, I had that with the micro synth from EHX. Got a bit scratchy on the pots. You could get some good effects, mm-hmm. but also liquid
spillage.
Buy some
deoxid, it'll be your friend.
Yeah. Liquid spillage is not your friend with sliders.
With open pots like that, it's a big, big, big problem. You do not want to spill a beer on a potentiometer, like an EQ pedal, for example. You spill that inside those potentiometers, you're going to have problems.
Now, I maintain, and Blake does not maintain, but I maintain that due to the gearing of simply turning a knob, you have more fine-tune control over turning a knob than you do a slider. Blake, discuss.
I think it's about the same. As far as the needs for accuracy on a guitar pedal, it's good enough either way.
Yeah. Whoa there. So my thought there is, it depends on what type of pedal. Like, let's say it's a delay time. Well, those fine times, that can be a big difference from, let's say, 150 milliseconds to 250, depending on the pot taper itself. You know, that. But if it's a gain control, you know, it's not a big difference going from two right. to four on a potentiometer.
Well, let's face it. We all go 0, 50, 100 on a gain pedal and then end up at 75.
Pretty much,
most
yeah. It's
of
like,
the time. So,
you know, 9 o'clock, noon, and all the way up. That's your gain settings, right? But delay times and delay mix, wait, that's something completely different.
But delay times that are fun to mess with on a slider. And I would say more fun than a potentiometer.
Yeah, it could be, depending. I mean, not so good if you're trying to, you know, get a certain tempo, you know?
Yeah, but if you're like, playing and you want it to go like, it's way more fun on a slider.
That's true. But even more
you can
fun
definitely
if you
do some tricks on a slider
pedal.
That you can definitely do some tricks on a slider. You can start doing the old fader mixing like a DJ. But then people will be like, yeah. Why is this guitarist on all fours on stage? I don't like this.
That's normal.
I appreciate the fact that they've thought outside of the box. That is definitely something that I really look for in any new product. So I think they'll do well on the basis that there's some innovation there. Longer term, I know that nearly every device I've owned that's had sliders on it that's cost me less than $500, I've lost a slider at some point. Just going to put that out
a little nubby.
There.
Yeah.
Ping right that's off, fair. And then you tread on it, and you're in trouble. So
then, I mean, I've stepped on an EQ pedal or two in my time, and it's pretty easy to bend them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Brian is an especially EQ bender.
Fourth set, you know, you're already a couple beers deep into the evening. You're going to step on an EQ pedal. It's just going to happen. It's going to happen.
Just an EQ pedal? What do you got against the other pedals? Why can't you step?
For some reason, the EQ, it's got all these little things that poke up, and your foot's just like, no, that's the one I'm going to step on.
That's the one I must destroy.
Right. Exactly.
I also was wondering a little bit about, is there more potential to, with your foot, kind of change the position of the controls? But I think that's one of the reasons why they've rather cleverly gone for horizontal sliders as opposed to vertical sliders. Because I think with a vertical mm-hmm. slider, there would definitely be a tendency to push your toe against it and maybe flip the settings. But with a horizontal slider, all you're going to do is maybe meet some resistance, bend it, or the aforementioned pinging of the plastic slider cap off into the audience. Yeah. But these aren't aimed necessarily at gigging players.
Yeah, I've never really had that problem with changing knobs and stuff, but I usually just use my toe and not my heel, you know, to turn the pedal on or off.
But you have size 3 feet,
I will say, and
feet,
I think I mentioned this in the very beginning. For the audio podcast listeners, it doesn't do a lot of good, but they're very nice aesthetically, at least from this zoomed out shot that I can see. They look cool. But of course, that's usually a strong point with Walrus, generally.
Yeah, speaking. I love the design on them.
Yeah, they got good designs.
They look cool. Other things we need to cover very quickly, I need to cover this because I've been texted about it for a while tonight. So Gibson have just launched a Peter Green Kirk Hammett Les Paul, and it's $20,000. Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours got the email, and quicker than I can go down to GAC and pick myself up a cheapo Gilmore Strat, has ordered one of these suckers. But what do we think about spending $20,000 on a guitar?
Oh, me. Hey, Chris, go on Reverb and look up Rare Friedman Vintage T with Glazer Bender. User Brian Wampler.
That has nothing to do with Les Paul. I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah, I got a guitar.
You know
for
what
sale?
goes you know? Really, really well with a vintage Les Paul, Bri? Some beautifully handcrafted leather dog's collars, which you can get by going to eBay and looking up user Ollie2000, or in fact, from styleupyourpet.com. Shipping to US is separate.
You know what would be really great with all of that is you need a set of premium guitar strings for these new axes you got. So you should go to stringjoy.com and order yourself some. And in the meantime, you can tie your old ones together and use it to lead your dog about town.
With this new fancy dog collar. Hey, that's right. Just in case you need some pedals to hook up to that nice Les Paul, there's a site called
walrusaudio.com. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry.
WamplerPedals.com is my personal favorite. I mean, that's where I go for all my tonal needs. You know,
I've got two of our new pedals here, and I was going to just slightly try and show one upside down, but it's too risky, Bri. Too risky.
Too risky.
Too risky.
Don't chance it. Don't chance it. People
don't
might
worry.
Think it's...
Don't so, worry. A dealer will show it all prematurely very
yeah,
soon.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be leaked here shortly.
By the time this goes out, it's probably gone out. Would you guys buy a new guitar for $20,000? What would it take for you to spend $20,000 other than having $20,000 spare to spend on guitars?
I was going to say, in the cavity, it would have to be stuffed about 20, you know, $19,500 in inside one of the
I was going to say, if it was stuffed with 40 grand, then I would easily do it.
I'd buy a couple for that.
I'd buy lots of them. Yeah, I'd buy
well, it's
every
funny you should say
that
because he did think, should I buy another one ready to flip? I'm like, dude, just stop now. Seriously. But that's a good point. So, these are going to go
Les
up Paul's in value.
The new Bitcoin.
Maybe. Les coin.
I mean,
oh, no,
depending on what
that.
You mean by that exactly.
Well, yeah, sorry. Are these the new investment to get for
what you mean? Are these the new massive investment in Twitter? Oh, no, wait a minute. That's gone horribly wrong, too.
No, probably don't want to. I wouldn't do that right now.
Which reminds
actually,
me
it's private, so you can't.
If we don't have a blue tick soon, no one's going to see us tweet. You know that?
Well, the funny thing is no one's going to see any one tweet because people are getting kind of pissy about the whole Twitter thing. So
spray yourself for swaying on the main episode, Bri.
It's probably going to take care. Probably going to take care of itself. I can't find it. Oh, here we go. There we go.
Self.
Oh, wait. No. Hold on. That's not it. Hold on. Wait. Wait. Wait.
Hold on.
Hold it. Hold on. Hold on. Just. Okay. After that, whew, got to cool down a little bit.
There we go. Yeah. Congratulations, mysterious friend of the podcast, for your recent investment. We all are basically envious that we don't have 20K to go and drop on guitars. But I think I would be buying a vintage for that sort of money. I'm not sure I'd buy a new guitar for that sort of money. Look, he is a huge, huge Peter Green fan. Well, so if you were
I get it. Yeah.
Here's the thing. You're not going to be able to buy, if that's the type of guitar you want, if you want a 59 burst, you know, Peter Green style Les Paul, you can't buy that for $20,000. You can buy that for hundreds of thousands of dollars if one ever becomes available, or maybe even millions at that point. Who knows? But yeah. if that's really what you want, that's the cheapest way you're going to get it. So
$1 million.
At some point, maybe. Who knows?
Probably.
After Kirk Hammett gets rid of this thing, you know, who knows?
What else was I going to talk? No, that's basically it.
And that's all we got.
Amazing.
Right? No? No?
We got more, but we can do it on Patreon, Bri, because our Patreon folk need to hear some interesting things.
We have a whole nother episode coming up for those who, you know, send us a little bit of coffee money every month for Patreon membership.
That's right.
That should be Chasing Tone podcast on Patreon, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. We love
and,
you all.
You know what? While I'm at it, I should probably thank some of our, all of our executive producers on this Patreon. Ready? Here we go.
Yep.
Bill Bays, Jake Young from Man the Helm podcast, Justin Burke, David Tindall, Night Haas, Dave Trombetti, Shannon Weaver and the band Reduced to Rust, Eric Wilson, Radar Frosted, Michael Freer, Sean Arbo of Gun Street Wiring, Rick Calhoun of Honey Picks, Dylan Talks Tone. I skipped one.
DJ Patty F.
Dylan Talks Tone.
DJ Patty F. You can't forget about him, brother.
Strand, Kevin Harrington, Barry from Grez Guitars, Felicia Makes the Annoying Memes, Tom Kelly, Pigsy, John O'Neill, Robert Carr, my new best friend, Hunter Hudson, Rob Stokes, Jordan from Poison Noises.
Awesome Nick JHS Spano. Episode, by the way, Jordan. We didn't talk about that. We'll talk about it on the Patreon, but that was very funny.
That's right. That was great.
How could we forget to talk about that?
Congratulations on it. Go check that out. It was last week as you listened to this. So
3 weeks
Jordan
ago by the time you heard
from Poison
this.
Noises on JHS. Nick Spano, the Twain Kings, Sasha Sir, Jay Stratton, Seth Williford, Grumpy Mike, and Harry Post. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you on Patreon in just a minute, unless, you know, you're not one of the cool kids. Then we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, email info@tonemob.com, and Richard can be reached at richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is to share this podcast with a friend, leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts, and also check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. Make sure to check out WamplerPedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course, guitar effects. If you'd like to hear the post-podcast conversations and to get even more content, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chasingtonepodcast. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.